And we're live with our 319th episode of Absolute AbSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Excited to be here. As always, a lot is happening. Before we get into the specifics today and the articles and Vercel and everything else that's happened in the industry over the last week, I did want to mention that Ken and I will be in Singapore in a few days, right? If you signed up for the course, you should have gotten an email from me this morning about setup and how we need to get into LLMs and all the use cases for the course itself. Otherwise, there are still a couple of seats available. They did expand our room size. So if you are still looking to take the course at DEF CON Singapore, there are still a few seats available, and you do have that opportunity to sign up. With that, we will be teaching at Black Hat and DEF CON over the summer. There are a couple of conferences that we're going to be at upcoming as well. I know personally, I'm going to be at B-Sides Vancouver. We've got a workshop and a talk picked up. We're going to be talking user enumeration, one of my favorite, you know, topics because no one likes it, that type of thing. Apparently, I love those sorts of discussions. And we also have the AppSec Summit, I think is the name of it, in Santa Clara, San Jose, San Francisco, in the Bay Area in the middle of May, where we will be down there. So if you're going to be in the Bay Area around that time and would like to get together, please reach out. If you need an invite to Slack, please reach out to either Seth or Ken at absoluteabsec.com, and we can add you to the Slack channel. Let me think. Any other announcements, Ken? Am I forgetting something? Anything?
I think so. I don't think so.
Yeah, it's just been a lot of heads down the last couple of weeks, I think, on our part, especially after the social engineering attack on Absolute AbSec Slack and everything else that's gone on. So just appreciate everyone being here. There's going to be upcoming guests. Ken and I will be out next week because we will be in Singapore. So we'll probably try and do a live show or record an episode while we are there, as we discovered DEF CON Singapore and what that actually looks like. But otherwise, I think the biggest news that's happened in the last week or in the last couple of days, it's never a week-long news cycle anymore. It's like a 24-hour cycle, is the Vercel hack that actually happened. Do you have a link that you want to talk through on that one, Ken, specifically?
Yeah, I can give their... So first, this is from Vercel. The next one will be from, we'll explain this in a moment. The next one will be from Context AI, putting that one in. And the last one will be a Reddit thread here about Delve, D-E-L-V-E, Delve. That's everything. Okay, yeah, so just a real quick one on Vercel. So I believe it was April 19th, I guess Sunday would have been Sunday, I think. Yeah. They put out a warning that they had indicators of compromise and what those indicators of compromise were, which I do recommend, and I did this at my org, I do recommend if you're using a Google Workspace that you go and you look at the, it's like audit and privacy or something along those lines section of your Workspace admin, and you can see if the Google app, OAuth app, was installed inside of your or approved by any of your members to access their data. That Google app belonged to Context AI. Context AI is, I actually don't know a lot about that company. I was trying to figure it out this morning who they are and what they do and whatnot. But in any case, it's a newer company. It sounded like, it read like, and They offer enterprise and they offer consumer-based plans. Their enterprise plan is not affected. And I should explain what all is. I'll just explain the breach here in a second, but I'll just say that I believe it was their enterprise side that is not impacted, but their consumer side was the impacted side of things. Okay, so what actually happened? Well, Context AI consumer level allows you to connect agents to like your, I don't know, different, you know, docs, sheets, things like that, right? You can connect it and it can basically send emails on your behalf and fill out spreadsheets and do all kinds of different things on your behalf. The person from it sounded like engineers from Vercel had approved that Context AI app and gave it like allow all permissions, right? Which I think is Context AI mentioned that, but it's like, let's be honest, most of the time that's what these apps ask for is, and it's just pretty much like click a button, allow all, and it's kind of the easy button on getting it installed. I don't think it's weird to think that it's not abnormal that person would have said, yeah, allow all to whatever. Is it good practice? No, but is it realistic that an engineer would do that? Yeah, absolutely. Or just a person would do that? Yeah, it is. So in any case, on their consumer side of the house, give me 1 second here. I want to check something. All right. The way that it worked was they got access to, they got access to Vercel's Google Workspace account. They pivoted. I must have gotten a token to pivot into some, they said like sort of Vercel environment. So I'm guessing they got access to some of their servers or a database or something. And Vercel allows you to mark things as sensitive. And when things are marked as sensitive in terms of environment variables, they can't be read back, right? They can only be inputted that one time and they can't be read later. But if they are not marked as sensitive, then it can be read. So what they had was a situation where some small portion of customers who had environment variables not marked as sensitive, doesn't mean that they couldn't be sensitive, but those people, those environment variables would be leaked for those customers. The story gets a little, have you at all seen the Delve and the Context AI side of things, Seth?
I was just looking into it. I mean, most of what I saw initially was just, or the analysis that I was reading was just what happened at Vercel specifically, right? I didn't dig that far into what was going on with Delve and with the app itself, right? So where are you going with that?
Right. So I should explain too. So that one. So there was, I'll give another link here. It's a tweet from George, I'm going to butcher this, but, oh, I'm sorry. I don't know how to say this name. I'm just going to put the handle on StreamYard. But this person, I can switch between tabs more efficiently. And if you want to even show that on your, or I can if you want, whatever. Give me 1 sec here.
Oh, you're good.
Trying to do all the things here with Spenger, but it basically it's a tweet that threw a little shade at Delve and Context AI. And I was a little confused at first reading it. So I'll explain my confusion and maybe, I don't know if others had the same level of confusion, but all right, let me share this. All right. Window, allow, cool. Should be shared. Okay. And I know that's a little big, so let me.
There you go. Here. That looks good.
Yeah. So I was a little confused because they wrote, you know, you cannot make this up. And I was like, I didn't really understand because at first it was sort of like without, actually I'll use the word context here, without background context, I had no idea what was going on in this tweet. So now Anthony, Anthony had posted this in our Slack. I think it was In any case, I read it and said, I confirmed that Context AI was audited by Dell for SOC 2, redirects now deleted, but trust docs context.ai used to redirect to Dell themselves. And it said, you cannot make this up, right? And I'm thinking, well, that's actually pretty standard. Like a lot of times you do see like a trust subdomain of a company and it redirects to whoever their SOC 2 provider was. And so I looked it up and Dell's a SOC 2 provider. And I saw the quotes of audited and I was like, what does this all mean? Like, this isn't weird to me, right? There must be something else that I'm missing, which brings me to the next comment, which I'm trying to pull up now. So give me a sec here. Sorry. I got way too big. Hold on one sec. I'll collapse this down back again. Okay. And then go back to StreamYard. Wow. That's a lot of stuff on there. Okay. But you can see my Reddit. You can see how it goes. Yep. All right. Let me kind of zoom in because I think this is all right. So basically it says Dell, a fake compliance as a service SOC 2 automation startup, caught fabricating evidence. Now, when I looked up their funding, because I just look at kind of funding and you know how long a company's been around and whatnot. Dell, those are some pretty huge allegations because Dell got, I think it was last year, in July of 2025, they got $30 million or $32 million in Series A, and their valuation was at $300 million. So, yeah, I don't know. It seemed a little odd to call them to say that they're fake compliance or something along those lines. But as I go through the comments, there's a lot of support to say that that's actually kind of true. And I guess a month ago, they had also put out. Corinne Koshyk, their CEO, had to put out basically they were breached, right? So, they worked with Mandiant. And by the way, Context AI, I think they mentioned they were working with either Mandiant or CrowdStrike as well to like do cleanup as a side note. But as you go through this article, and I do think it's interesting, and I think people should read through this article, it's kind of a lot of the sentiment of people believe that this is sort of an AI, basically a bunch of agents and that there isn't real auditing or something along those lines. Those are some pretty severe accusations. I have no opinion on that. And I also like, if that's not true, man, that could be really, as a business owner, I get why that could be really not great for Delve. And I definitely don't want to put any undue negative attention on them. I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is that I'm curious if anybody else has any flavor on this, because I'm kind of reading all this secondhand, It just seems like a lot of people are kind of making an assumption that I don't know that there's any proof, definitive proof. I don't know. So that's why.
In the YouTube comments, Bobby's talking about how YC's dropped Delve and that there is a deep Delve saga that's well documented. So we'll have to do a little bit of research there. This is an interesting just case study in what can happen with AI, right? Kind of across the board. So aside from the fact that that Vercel or Context AI got audited, got their SOC 2 audit using Delve, right? Like aside from that, hallucinations, like we've talked about this for a while, that AI wants to be helpful, right? So creating data based on the training data that's available is going to happen. And if you're not watching for it, it can have issues like we're seeing here. Now, whether or not it actually happened in this case, it looks like Delve is responding that there's not, fake SOC 2 reports that are being generated. I would argue, like in general, like compliance versus security is a discussion that we've had multiple times on this podcast, meeting compliance regulations does not mean that you're secure, right? Every breach that's happened has happened against an organization that has been audited in some manner, whether it is PCI, whether it's SOC 2, whether it's ISO, whether it's, LFedRAMP or any auditing framework that's out there is going to miss things those are table stakes to getting to certain customers, certain certain business targets or whatever it is. That's what compliance is built for. It's not necessarily built for security. Security is a byproduct in most cases, and it's supposed to ensure that there is some level of security in place, but compliance does not equal security. We've said this for years, and I mean, so this doesn't shock me in any stretch, right? Yeah, there was nearly no AI. I think Delve, it came out that they were actually claiming AI, and there was like some humans in the loop on the back end doing the analysis type thing, right? Yeah, it's really hard to prove claims when you've got, you know, multiple people speaking at it. And then you've got Redditors that are just making stuff up and telling their own story. So, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of looks to me, it looks like what Delve is trying to say is that, you know, hey, look, we just give all the information and we give templates and we basically collect information. And then we give that to an auditor who then is the one who, you know, goes through we give that to customers who can, you know, craft all that content so that it can be consumable for auditors, and that we're not the auditors. We're just the facilitators basically of the audit. Hey, from a business standpoint, I'm not saying this is not my opinion. I am saying that is like a thing, is to kind of say, well, So as an outsider who knows nothing, that doesn't seem crazy to say, like, oh, we give all the information and we let them, you know, so we give them templates, we give them, because, like, you know, for SOC 2, you need templates on everything, or not templates, you need document policies for everything. So you need like data storage and data classification policies all the way to like employee code of conduct, you know, all kinds of stuff, not just security. So it kind of makes sense. Customers work with independent accredited auditors. The Substack inaccurately said Delve relies on, quote, Indian certification mills operating through front companies, end quote, and cannot pass legitimate audits. This too is not accurate. Delve customers can opt to work with an auditor of their choosing or opt to work with one from Delve's network. There is the rub there, because, like, I will say, when people are buying a solution like this, I assume, like, I wouldn't want to be like, oh, you know what? No, I want to use your platform, but now I want to go through the process of finding separately from your platform auditors. It's like, no, I mean, I own a business. I've gone through SOC 2 a couple times now at that business. Obviously a lot elsewhere, but at that business as the owner, and can tell you that, no, I don't want to look for like a clouds or whatever, a product solution, and then also go look for my own auditor. Of course, I'm going to default to using what you're using. And if you're not providing me with, you know, legitimate auditors, that's on you. You can't, that one, you can't bluster away and say like, oh, hey, you know, not our problem. What do you think on that point too?
My biggest takeaway on that is customers are naturally going to go to the lowest cost option, right? So even if they are independent accreditor auditors and you could choose to use somebody in, you know, certain locations, right? Like the cost of labor in the US is more expensive than is in India. So naturally they're going to spit that direction. Bobby's saying that a lot of this was the, you know, you would answer a question in Delve as a client, and it would generate documentation based on that question that was then given to the auditors to audit, right? So, you know, it was standardizing your answer into audit or into control documentation that actually didn't exist or wasn't the case, right? Like, you and I have both gone through so many of these compliance questionnaires and had to respond to risk assessments and know what a pain it could actually be. and that you're constantly kind of tweaking your security policies and everything else that goes into it to meet compliance needs. That's to be expected. So generating of documentation is not necessarily out of the realm of what's normally happening, but the fact that your intermediary is generating it and not your security person on your team, there it gets really fuzzy, because it becomes this kind of rubber stamp. So that complaint would be rather valid. But then I go back to, yeah, of course you're going to choose the lowest cost option. I mean, the reason that you're going to a Delve or somebody else is to reduce the cost of a compliance audit. So SOC 2, you know, yeah, if you can get a SOC 2 check mark for only $1,000 instead of $10,000, most organizations are going to choose that $1,000 option. So customers work with whoever they choose, but there's got to be some sort of validation if you're playing that middleman, I guess. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't, you know, doesn't somehow recuse you from, like, just because you offer, or not that you offer, but just because people could go a different direction with their auditor choice doesn't mean that they will. And it doesn't certainly recuse you from, you know, doing your due diligence properly with your auditor. So I don't know. That doesn't seem like a very strong argument. I think, you know, what Bobby's saying here is that, you know, there's a lot of, so like, for instance, when I had mentioned that in that tweet, I said, well, you know, I didn't really understand why this was so weird, the trustcontext.ai. But, you know, what Bobby's saying in the chat is that, that was redirecting to a templated site that looked like every other site. And there was nothing actually specific, meaning, sorry, every other, you know, trust, every other variation of some trust site for different customers. They all look the same. There's nothing specific in the verbiage that to that company. And that's why it felt like it was like, no, you paid for us. We put up a site for you that people could navigate to, with everything being pre-filled out for you and no actual human, you know, no proper sort of review, no proper human intervention. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, I mean we're getting into the weeds. Yeah. Yeah. I we're kind of getting in the weeds on like compliance requirements, compliance and like auditing process, auditing flow, the trust documentation that's being generated. Yeah, it's not a good look that context like trust site went to Delve in and of itself, but that's probably a service that they provide, right? Like, you know, from an enterprise perspective, working with big companies, this is how they're structured, right? Like, so, you know, Context AI and Delve, you know, Context AI is probably a small fish in the overall view of what normally goes on with compliance, because large financials, large organizations utilize providers in this manner, right? They have their compliance providers, and they expect those compliance providers to have a report for them that is hosted by a third party to actually validate what is being done internally in that organization. That is not out of the realm of possibility. So I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, right?
That's not the point though, right? Like the point is that when that site got spun up, none of the documentation seemed, it was a copy. It's basically just copies of the same thing, with no actual
templates,
edits, yeah. No personalized, you know, org specific. It was literally just, I'm with you. That's actually pretty common where you get like templates spun up for you, but it's not common that, you know, like in 5 minutes you can spin. And I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying if that is what happened, where, you know, hey, I signed up, I paid for your site, you spun me up a copy and you said, cool. If anybody asked you about SOC 2, just pointing at that. Well, yeah, that's not proper compliance. If that's true, yeah, that's the problem. But I don't know if that's true. There's a lot of, it sounds, Bobby says there's a lot of evidence out there. So, I mean, I'm not doing great investigative journalism right now.
It's hard to do it live on the podcast.
Citing sources. Yeah, exactly.
But, so the big takeaway though is the Vercel, specifically the Vercel breach happened because an employee clicked on a link and said yes, gave authorization. All right.
Yeah.
It's a social engineering attack, right?
Yeah. Well, no, yeah. Not really. Well, it's they did approve. No, it's actually not, because this is a valid product. Context AI is a valid product. It's just that consumer side of it. And that's what the thing we didn't get to, because there's so many avenues to this story. We didn't even get to that part, which is why is it? Think about this. Why was the consumer side not fine for context AI, but the enterprise Bedrock specifically, they mentioned being backed by Bedrock, was okay. Fine. That to me is strange, right? Because being backed by something like Bedrock just means that you're able to access LLM services. You and I know that. We talk about it all the time. We have scripts and we teach a class where people use Bedrock for their different LLMs and all that stuff, right? So that's not weird, but I don't understand, I guess, what is, I've been trying to think about or trying to figure out the last hour is what made it different? Like, what's the difference? What were they doing? Why would the LLM, like, there's gotta be more to it than just the Bedrock side of things. You know what I mean? Like it can't be that the Bedrock component, like I wouldn't think is the reason that they got breached. I would say it's, or not breached rather. It's confusing to me. And actually, let me pull that up too. I should have pulled that up as well. I have it here. Let's go through context AI. So just to round this out, the summary, Seth, it's that a Vercel employee installed context AI to do like on a consumer-based plan. That consumer-based plan they had was breached, which gave them access to the Google Workspace where the Vercel app, or excuse me, the context AI app was installed. So they had access to Vercel's workspace. But ultimately, I think why we talked about Delve was just because then the question became, well, what's context AI security look like? I think there were a lot of questions and they didn't look like they, you know, it was very dubious, we'll say. Mm-hmm. And then the people started looking at their SOC 2 provider and there was already bad blood with Delve, and that's how we got to where we're at now. So let's see. So we released Context AI Office Suite, a self-service consumer-targeted work. Can you see this, by the way?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Designed to help users work with AI agents to build presentations, documents, and spreadsheets. The AI Office Suite offered a feature that allowed consumer users to enable AI agents to perform actions across their external applications facilitated via another third-party service. This feature and entire consumer offering was separate from our current enterprise product, built to run on-premise in customer environments. So maybe it has nothing to do with the fact that it like was backed by Bedrock. Maybe it's just literally, it's just so different of a suite from the production enterprise product that it, yeah. Separate from built to run. Last month, we independently identified and stopped a security incident involving authorized access to our AWS environment. At that time, we engaged CrowdStrike, a leading forensic firm, conducted. Right, that's part of this too. Sorry, I forgot about this. So how did they get breached? I believe it made it sound like when they did their cleanup of a other breach, they didn't realize that.
Yeah. OAuth tokens were compromised during the incident, and one happened to be the token for the Vercel Google Workspace.
Yeah. That's Vercel is not a context customer, but it appears that at least one employee enabled allow all requested Google Workspace permissions using their Vercel Google Workspace account. And again, like that's when I look at an app and it wants to be installed. I mean, I think most people, the default is what's the easy button? Allow all, mm-hmm. Click next. Cool.
Yep.
Or grant or whatever it is. We are conducting. So yeah, it's just, to me, it sounded like I said, it sounded like they had engaged CrowdStrike, conducted an investigation, informed one customer that they were identified. Right. And they said they closed that AWS environment, blah, 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 blah. But they found, but based on information that Vercel gave them when that breach occurred and during a follow-on investigation later, they realized that the OAuth tokens belonging to their AI office suite users were compromised during that prior incident. So if I'm reading between the lines, it sounds like CrowdStrike was brought in, but they didn't fully complete the investigation correctly. And there were some trail of bits left behind that needed some cleaning up.
Interesting. So this speaks to Vercel's response that it was a sophisticated attacker, right? Like that they had access to this data from Context AI. One of them happened to be this OAuth token. They did basically validation of the tokens themselves, realized that it gave them access to the Google Workspace associated with Vercel, which also happened to give it access to all of these secrets, some of which they could pull back, which meant that they had access to other, you know, other environments and customer data within the Vercel networks. It's this typical kind of like, this is what red teamers do during a red team assessment as well, right? Like you go gather data, you look and see what came back, you decide where that can actually be used, you identify sensitive keys, tokens, everything else that's available and access paths, and then you pivot, right? Like, okay, so Context AI, it doesn't look like we can do anything else there, but we have all this data we gathered from them. Now let's go somewhere else and see what else that can get us into, right? Like attackers do this all the time. Red teamers do this all the time. Really interesting, right? Like that's the pathway that this actually took. It wasn't as straightforward as I thought initially. And whether or not this is going to happen to somebody else is kind of unknown, right? Like at this point, because these bespoke style attacks will become more and more prevalent. They're going to get faster, especially as attackers use AI to actually do the analysis on these tokens and everything else that's running into it. And you're seeing a lot of red team tools pop up that are backed by AI to do this sort of analysis and to figure out where those pathways actually are. It speaks to this like cycle that compromisers are happening faster because AI is a tool for both defenders and attackers. And so we've got to be caught up in that loop.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anything else you want to say on this, or should we talk about the fact that PRs are dead, or maybe not?
We definitely should move into that for sure, that conversation. I would just say like one last final thought is that regardless of whatever with Delve and that company, which again, not a lot for me to go on, but I guess a little bit for me to go on, but. SOC is not true security. It's just sort of a minimum bar. We all know that. I just want to remind people of that, right? It's not really going to keep you completely secure, right? That's why we still exist for now. You know, it's why we exist security professionals. So in any case, I'll stop sharing this, and then we could talk about the poll I put out.
You put out a poll asking about whether or not the pull request flow, right, is dead. Now, for listeners, right, pull requests, this is the way that traditionally, like, we've built software, right? A developer goes in, makes some code changes, creates a pull request, at least, like, in most environments. Yeah, like, open source and small projects, we YOLO straight to main, right? But in an enterprise, the developer will create a pull request against the code base that contains all of the changes. Someone else will validate those changes and then merge those pull requests into the code base itself. Now, Ken, what's your argument? Why are you asking this question? Let's start there.
And let me pull up the survey. So I'm going to keep this running. There's going to be different types of surveys I think I'm going to be running. I'm trying to collect more and more data about kind of predictions from the community, where they think things are going to go. I started with this particular topic because this has been one of, frankly, just most recent discussion that I've seen. And I thought it was an interesting concept I do want to explain, though, because I think there is some confusion on what I mean versus what how it's being interpreted at times. So what I'm really talking about is not the human aspect and whether humans are going to be reviewing code, which I think is a very interesting, also very interesting topic. But that actually was not why I was asking this question. I was asking this question more about, you know, if pull requests go away. First of all, I just want to know if people think that that's going to happen. And what I really mean by that is there some other flow that's going to happen now that, you know, virtually there's in some organizations like Notion put out a whole thing on this where they've gone completely hands off and burned down the pull request flow. And basically, like with agents writing code, you know, there's perhaps other ways of solving for what pull requests did, which pull requests really gave us some ability to see like historically, like what was done on that code, what comments were given, what replies were given, what changes were made, you know, what tools ran. It gave us a checkpoint. So the second thing it did was it gave us a checkpoint for kind of a gate for validation, for approval. Also a nice way to roll back, you know, pretty easily if you needed to. I mean, granted, you can do that in other ways with Git, but you know, pretty easy way to roll back. There's lots of things I'm sure it gave me that I'm not thinking of, but I think at the end of the day, it was a nice gate. It required approval. You could set rules. You could make sure tools happen, and you could see all of the activity that happened. So I'm explaining the pull request bit because nowhere in there does it have to be a human, right? And I think people are going away from that in favor of agents. But what is interesting to me is that if all those things are not going to happen in the pull request flow, should they still happen? And if they do, and I would argue they should, I'll just say that out loud. I really think they should. I think there has to be some level of these things happened, and then this is our digital signature of those things for these commits that are being merged in or pushed to the default branch, right? I do think that needs to occur. That's my personal opinion, but I don't know like what alternatives exist. I don't know what other alternatives people are thinking of. So yeah, this is just more of an open-ended question of, it's almost like two questions. It's one I didn't even think of, which is like, do you think humans are going to go away from this approval flow? Which yeah, I would assume that's going to happen. I didn't realize that was a question, but let's get into that one too. And then separately to that, will there be another way to do all those things like gating? And is it gating necessary? And if not, like at least attestation and validation that we, you know, we did some of the security review things, we built the right unit tests, there was some functional review, et cetera. Any thoughts here, Seth, having that background now?
Yes, I have all sorts of thoughts and opinions, right? So pull requests in general, right? Like I think the flow will... With humans in the loop, I'm with you. I think that's it sticks around, right? Like as long as we have humans there, we've got to have some way to actually analyze that. What that pull request actually looks like from an agentic perspective is going to change. I know it's changing for us internally. It probably is for you as well. Because of the amount of code that's being generated, we are struggling with, and we're working with clients that are struggling with how to actually perform those same sort of actions against agentic or AI created code, because it is so much, the volume has just increased significantly. So like a few weeks ago, we were looking at like the AI development lifecycle, the ADLC or whatever we're calling it now, the SDLC with the traditional pull request I feel like it's already gone in a lot of organizations because of the amount of code that's being generated, especially more agile organizations, startups, and other things that are utilizing Claude and Codex and other AI tools to actually generate and create applications. The pull request flow takes too long in the traditional SDLC. So with that, but I would argue like the overall idea is not dead, because we're looking at other places to do the same thing, whether that is skills, whether that is guardrails like, you know, agents.md files, claude.md files, .claude, you know, memory and other things, because I still see errors being made by the agents themselves. And so we've got to do some sort of monitoring on what those agents are doing. And so it's just, it's pushing out this pull request flow into a different, it's evolving, I guess is what I'm seeing. So I have a hard time saying it's completely dead, but in its current form, I feel like it's already dead, right? So
I don't disagree.
Yes and no. Actually, yeah.
You want to see the results so far. That's where we're at.
Interesting. Yeah.
Half the community that was pulled or responded to the survey said never going to happen. Everybody else is basically saying like different timelines on a 2-year to 3-year plus kind of timeline. So it seems like the majority, or excuse me, we're pretty evenly split. Some say never going to happen, and some believe within the next, you know, X amount of years, yes, it will go away.
And is this just the purview of where somebody actually sits, the development that they're doing, right? The organization that they're dealing with, right? You look at traditional organizations that are still, I mean, they're stuck in the old agile fall methodology, right? Like it's really waterfall, where did I get that? Waterfall
methodology.
Yeah, I know. Welcome to, you know, April 21st of 2026. But so if you're in an organization that is built around this idea of gates and milestones and, you know, long development cycles, it's going to be hard to see past that actually going away, especially where it's highly regulated and mandated governmental financial organizations. They're not going to change kind of those gates and those processes that quickly. This is probably a good breakdown of actually like people that we know, right? Like, because we have a lot of people that are in those traditional organizations, and that's what they're dealing with on a daily basis. So it's hard to say, yes, this is going to go away because that's what their daily work looks like. Whereas someone at a startup that is using Claude Code that isn't even using pull requests anymore, and they're just looking at commits as they're flowing into that development branch, it's already gone. So that's where the less than 6 months come from. But I do find it interesting that 30% think that it's going to be gone in 18 months, right? So there are organizations that are switching and are changing. It speaks to how we do development as well. I mean, you are running a development organization, Ken. Like, how dependent are you on that pull request flow?
Yeah, dependent on it, but not...
not tied to it.
We still do require human beings to approve. I think that's for us fairly, and this is going to be split across the board. I actually think maybe that's what you were saying, and a part of what those results indicate is just like different environments, different requirements, right? I'm a security company. Still need somebody to say they saw that all the bots did all their things and they looked at the code a little bit, and at least a little bit, and that things looked normal. So I can tell you, I definitely get a mix of human and bot feedback on the code changes that I submit and that my team members submit. But the world that I think that we're moving towards is like you'll hear people. You and I were talking about this before the call, which was like, a lot of the old way of doing things is kind of just changing and maybe dead in some areas. And I think like autonomous style actions are going to become more and more a thing, right? So kind of some guardrails. Sorry, I'm getting a phone call. I have to.
Yeah.
Video cuts out. When that, actually, I think that happened to you last week where your audio.
It did. Welcome to the club. Yes. It's interesting that you call out guardrails there, right? Because, one of the actions that I've seen, even setting up claude.md files and .claude like, you know, the directory and skills and instructions and memory. I, you know, to be like, hey, guess what? We use pull requests, right? Like every single time we use pull requests. And a lot of our, like our organization along pull requests is so we can actually track issues and see the burn down on different features and things that we're working on, right? Like that's the whole reasoning behind it. And a lot of those issues are created by AI or, you know, AI assisted as well. But the funny thing is I will see at times, and it's not an insignificant amount, the Claude just decide to go and commit straight to the development branch, right? And then it turns around and then it creates the PR after that and goes, oh, whoops, I did this, right? Like it's crazy to me, but I also like, I get it because it gets into the flow. It has agents that it's trying to manage like Opus does or whatever it is. But this is part of that degradation that we're also seeing with the coding assistants is they're trying to reduce their overall cost because those are burning tokens. And it's all like this cascading effect of just AI being used more and more.
Not at all. No, I'm glad you did because I couldn't hear a thing. It was, I told you the audio does cut out. Why I was saying that is that I just think like, the PR flow is very useful from my standpoint right now. I don't have like a reason to go away from it. And I was actually thinking about what would be the alternative. So let me give you the one alternative I could think of. So current flow, even if like it's, you know, no human beings involved, you still want bots sort of arguing. Here's an actual real thing that happens inside of our development org. So we've got, I've talked about this before, skills and superpowers. Whenever we're creating a pull request, there are certain actions we haven't taken certain sequences. I say it, that could be Claude, that could be Codex, that could be whatever we're using, but those tend to be the main ones are Claude and Codex. We do use both in our org. We use, typically if we're going to write with one, we'll review with the other. We found that to be like very effective. Why do I say that? Well, so, you know, when we submit, there are guidelines around how we build tests and how we run those tests. There's guidelines around even creating a design plan table structure thing that goes in the pull request as like the first comment, kind of explaining important details about what's going on. There's a requirement that if you're running Claude or Codex, that one of the other that it invokes one of the other ones. So like, for instance, if I wrote the code and pushed it with Claude code, then Codex needs to be up and running and triggered to then perform a review, right? So it performs a code review. I did see today though, Claude code actually ran it, both wrote the code and reviewed locally. We like to do both because Claude, you know, you get what you get with the security review stuff. So we've got our actual production level high signal, you know, fancy stuff going on at the PR level. But before we go to the PR level, as we're working through the PR, that's when that like last step will happen where there's the functional stuff, the unit tests and the security reviews. And then once it gets up to the PR level, if dry run finds anything, then it reads that comment. Also, we use Copilot as our automatic reviewer. So Copilot always performs functional reviews on the pull request and it's directed to read those comments recursively, just like it is any other bot that's important, such as a dry run. And it then mitigates those. And if it's not going to mitigate those, it just replies to it, the comment. And in any case, in either case, whether it's mitigated or resolved, mitigated or replied to with like a reason why it's not going to be resolved, those comments or annotations get closed out. Once all that's done, that's when then a human being tends to come in our flow to that, but that doesn't have to happen, right? So let's say a human never did. And in fact, there was just this like orchestrator agent that went through all agents' work and made sure that all agents did things the way they were supposed to, even maybe did it its final attestation and approval and thumbs up, and that goes into the flow. So even in a situation like that, where there's not really a human except for, you know, prompting the tool to build the code, I don't know that there's a better flow that I've seen other than pull requests for that. Because the other option would be, the only other option I could think of is everybody commits to the same default branch. But I feel like at that point, you would need your agentic tool that's writing code to do an attestation, like a signed with a certificate kind of card that says, yes, I did all these things and all these things ran and all the actions were taken. Because that's what I'm getting value out of a pull request is like seeing that historical change. It's change management. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to like, I guess what I'm trying to say is now mostly it's retroactive. It's not like there's enough things that we're doing that proactively secure or not just secure, but keep it functional, keep it working correctly, whatever. That retroactive attestation is usually what I'm more interested in, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm talking about visuals on that.
Yeah. I think that's where I kind of go with the, you know, it's changing, but it's not going to go away because we still need some sort of record. This does feel like a spot where some sort of actual like blockchain signing mechanism would make a lot of sense, that an agent has access to sign and certify that something has actually been done and that can be validated by the top level agent from a commit perspective or whatever it is to actually create that log if that's what you're looking for. But you could almost use, you know, some sort of blockchain style submission to actually do that for you, as opposed to utilizing it within a pull request style flow. Finally a use for blockchain. I keep thinking that that's going to be one of the, this is one of the use cases that could come out of the whole AI hype cycle that we're in, is the ability to actually like, hey, you know, AI agents can sign things on the blockchain, so can humans, and we have like a certain level of trust and attestation as to who is doing what. And that's always been one of the problems with, I mean, Git, we've talked about this for a while, like, you know, you can change your Git username to match anyone that's out there and push code, right? Granted, you probably don't have signatures, and if you're not doing signed commits, it looks like it was actually that person who committed code to a specific project, right? And yeah, I mean, we're going to get to signed commits very quickly, especially with agents and whether or not an agent is authorized to do something. If it falls within the purview of what they're supposed to be working on, we've got to have a log of that somewhere, whether that is in the initial prompt that's being sent to the agents, whether that is in some sort of test-driven development, like all of these coding techniques that seem to be dead in the water are now coming back around, and there's a reason for it, because that is how we provide some level of certification that the code is doing what we expected it to do. Right? I don't know, man. It's changing so quickly that it's hard to predict. And what's going to happen in 2 weeks, or, you know, hell, wherever Anthropic decides to focus next, might change that again completely, right?
Yeah, actually, you're not wrong. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if here's the play. If I'm Anthropic or OpenAI, so create a new way that's not pull request flows based off of whatever protocol. It could be Git protocol, whatever. Probably Git protocol. That'd be the easiest, right? Mm-hmm. Replace the way that code flow goes and how PRs exist and that whole thing. Change that. Then build your own version as an Anthropic or OpenAI of your own GitHub that's like with that new flow that's just for agents. Market it, sit back, get rich, ruin everybody's business, cause a lot of disruption. I'm just kidding, Seth. This is just jokes. Sorry if my dark humor today and distaste for frontier models is rubbing or coming out, seeping out.
Yeah. Nope. It's completely valid, right? Like, you know. Yeah. All right. I think that's probably it for today. I know both of us have other stuff to get to. Appreciate everyone for interacting, for listening. Please reach out to either Seth or Ken at absoluteabsec.com if you would like an invite to Slack. Just have to at least have a little bit of a gateway there. We're also introducing some moderators to the Slack channel to actually help us maintain a certain level of decorum, I guess we should say, within Slack. But it is a great resource. We do want you in there. We just have to put a small gate in place. Otherwise, if you are going to be in Singapore, please reach out. We would love to get together, go have drinks, and talk about the, you know, the dumpster fire that is everything right now, or, you know, how you are utilizing AI, how you can build your own Mythos. That's basically what we're teaching. And yeah, I think that's everything for now. Ken, any other final thoughts?
Nope. Really appreciate it. And appreciate everybody watching. And we'll see you probably not next week, but the week after.
Yep, exactly. All right. Thanks, all. We'll see you online.
See ya. Bye.